President Trump strikes deals in China, just maybe not the deals everyone wants. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. President Trump wrapped up his second day in China as he continues his tour through Asia. The president will be able to return to the United States, claiming to have snagged over $250 billion in deals from his maiden trip to Beijing. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pack has been following the president's trip and finds some American companies worry that the president's deals do little to address their key issues. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Sabri.
So why would some companies not be impressed by these deals?
A lot of these deals are non-binding, and they don't give a lot of details. So in the case of Boeing, for example, they agreed to sell 300 planes to China, but they didn't really say whether some of these planes were already sold. And a lot of these deals don't really address the concern of U.S. businesses in China, which is fairness. And at the moment, U.S. companies and other foreign businesses are limited in their investment in sectors like healthcare, agriculture, financial services, and IT. And so that's what they want Trump's administration to be addressing.
What's not fair about the relationship? Where's the lack of fairness?
Well, for example, when it comes to market access for bioseeds, it takes a long time for approvals. When it comes to insurance industries, there is a cap on how much they can invest here in China for American companies, but no such restriction for Chinese companies in the U.S. And of course, you have complaints that Chinese firms don't face nearly as many restrictions in the U.S. as U.S. companies do here in China. So the key thing here to remember is that there are many vague rules here in China. It's not clearly spelled out, and they could change at a moment's notice. And that's what they say needs to be changed.
Any chance that's going to change? Any chance the administration is pushing on this fairness question?
The economies of the U.S. and China are closely linked, and that has not changed. But what the U.S. really needs at this point in time is to focus on future industries, on, for example, green technology and smart technology that China is moving very aggressively in. And so long as American companies don't have equal access when they come here to the Chinese market, what's eventually going to happen is they're going to be competing with Chinese companies, and they already are in some cases, in foreign markets. And so right now, they don't feel as if Trump's administration is taking this as seriously. There have been concerns and things that have been addressed in Washington related to cybersecurity, for example, blocking some access of acquisitions by Chinese tech firms, but not nearly enough is what they're saying.
All right. Jennifer Pack, Marketplace's China correspondent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Congress has a serious problem with sexual harassment and assault, according to California Congresswoman Jackie Speier. She says that's in part because members and staff aren't required to undergo sexual harassment training, something commonplace in corporate America. Several members of Congress are proposing bills to require this kind of training on Capitol Hill. But here's the problem with training. It's not totally clear that it always works. Joining us now is Vicky Magley, professor of psychology at the University of Connecticut, and one of the few researchers to look at the effectiveness of sexual harassment training. Good morning, Professor Magley.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So what does the research show when it comes to sexual harassment training?
Well, unfortunately, I need to be very, very clear in answering this question in that the existing empirical research is so limited that there truly are only three studies out there that have examined in the workplace trainings with real working adults. One of these studies found, unfortunately, that training men can lead to backlash. Another has found that knowledge is only increased for some people, but not all people, in terms of knowledge about sexual harassment. And one of the big findings, I think, out of this third study is that harassment training can be effective if it is done within an organizational culture that is perceived by the employees to be ethical.
Basically, it sounds like if people are going into a training thinking, oh, this is just for show, the company doesn't believe this, you know, this is just to cover their backs, then it's not going to be effective.
Absolutely.
You know, given this limited research, how do you do it right?
Oh, that's a good question. In June of 2016, the EEOC published a report on the study of harassment in the workplace. They highlight in particular the value of making certain that the training is perceived to be genuine, to try to minimize any type of cynicism going in before the training. Interestingly, the EEOC report also highlights the importance of potentially shifting to civility training and civility interventions.
What is it about shifting the paradigm to teaching people how to be professionals as opposed to focusing on sexual harassment? What is it about that shift that you think would be more effective?
It's about how people enter into that training. When you enter into it prepared to be told that you've been naughty, you go in cynical. When you enter into a training scenario where you're being told explicitly that we're going to give you ideas on how to create community, on how to bond with one another in productive, cohesive, collaborative kinds of ways, it's the mindset.
Vicky Magley, professor at the University of Connecticut, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.